Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, it's great to be here in Great Falls with the MACRS Convention, the Montana Association of County Road Supervisors. I wish I could repeat all of the conversations that we had last night, because, man, there are some smart people in this room, and these guys know how to build things as well. But, yeah, great conversations. We were at the Caterpillar dinner last night, and I ran into Steve Jenkins and, the commissioner out of Harlow, Montana, Commissioner Jeff Sell. It was fun chatting with him, talking about Central Montana water projects and so much more. But great to have Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter here with us, kicking off our statewide show. Sheriff, you're just like the official Montana Talks greeter. So anyway, what do you want to tell our listeners across Montana? What's moving and shaking in Cascade County and Gray Falls?
A lot.
Even outside of the law enforcement purview.
There's a ton going on here. You know, we have huge projects going on in our jail. We have the second largest jail in the state of Montana. The largest one is in your hometown of Billings, of course. And the amount of people and the amount of, I call it the cog in the wheel for the justice system, keeping that thing spinning, keeping the justice system moving along. All the different people you have to talk to, all the big egos, all the big personalities, anywhere from, you know, I think I have like 8 judges in this county that I have to, you know, communicate with and, you know, somehow build a relationship through a lot of conflict. A lot of conflict happens with jails. Your U.S., your DOC director. I mean, I have good relationships with people. We get along great, but that jail is an 800. And so that's a big project. We're getting, you know, tons of support from our commissioners. I have a big meeting on. We need to talk about future planning of the jail. All jails are overcrowded. How are we going to service our community into the future? How are we going to do that? It's a huge challenge.
Yeah, jails are overcrowded, and part of the challenge there, too, is that the state prison needs more capacity as well. Do you think the legislature will approve an expansion on that front here this session?
You know, I hope so, but I also think I kind of want to give credit to the DOC where credit's due. You know, Director Gutkin's done a good job. He's shipping them to Arizona
to put them somewhere.
To prisons that have the room. You know, the private prison industry, I think it's in Arizona and Tennessee, they've built facilities and they have extra space. And so they're paying a daily rate for them. But I think the daily rate overall is going to be way cheaper. I imagine due to families wanting to visit, you know, because we're talking about long-term prison sentences.
Sure.
The need for them to be in a town, because I hate the fact that families get punished because someone in their, you know, it doesn't mean that people don't love that person.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
even though people get pretty cynical about it.
And there's some people that need to be locked up for the rest of their lives,
yeah,
kept there. But
yeah,
there's some people that, hey, they need to go, you know, pay the piper, do their time, and then come back and hopefully be better citizens on the back end, which some actually do. And so,
well, it is called the Department of Corrections. So I think you'd say their goal is to correct their behavior and make them better members of society.
All right, hold that thought. More with Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter right after this.
From Mundakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, I'll tell you guys, earlier this morning I was catching up with Cascade County Sheriff Jesse Slaughter, and we talked in depth about his school safety plan that's in effect now and his idea to really expand this school safety plan at the national level. Later today or on through the weekend, check out our Montana Talks podcast for some of that extra audio, because of course we've got a very fast moving statewide hour of the show for you here today. But Sheriff Slaughter, I think I just read this a few days ago. It might have been on your Facebook page, or maybe somebody did a news story about it. And I caught up with Cascade County Commissioner Joe Briggs last night, and he was saying, yeah, well, what you're doing now, technology, some new techniques at the Cascade County Jail, it seems like you're figuring out a way to reduce and hopefully stop inmate suicides in the jails, which is big, not just for a human life standpoint, but also from a liability for the county standpoint as well.
Absolutely. And I'm glad Commissioner Briggs said that, because he fought me on it for like 2 years to get the technology in there. And I'm very grateful for, you know, them understanding that it was needed. So I say that tongue in cheek, but we are really excited about it. It's really not the technology, it's the people. The people do a fantastic job up there, but suicide in jails is nothing new, but it's becoming a huge epidemic across the state of Montana because Warm Springs has no capacity anymore. Even when people get committed to Warm Springs, they end up there for a week, they end up sending right back into our community, right back arrested, right back in our jail. And we are now becoming the mental health facility for the state of Montana at the Cascade County Detention Center. We literally are. We have the amount of mentally ill people who are literally not even fit to stand trial, but are housed in our jail is unbelievable. So we have got grants. We have hired mental health professionals, social workers. We have a $1.2 million diversion grant. But we also needed some technology to make sure we were doing all of our checks and make sure that we were accountable to being on time to everything. You know, you can write a policy and you could say, hey, every half hour, every 15 minutes, you got to check on inmate. Well, if it's just a policy and no one's sitting there with a stopwatch and an alarm telling you it's got to happen, that becomes, you know, troubling. So this it's called Guardian RFID. You can Google it if you want. But basically, it's a program. They carry around a little tablet, like cell phone thing, but that's not what it is. It has the whole inmate roster on it. They're all on different schedules, depending upon what their issue is. And basically, they get alerted. They need to go check on that person. They go check on that person. There's a little indicator on the door that makes them beep it to tell them they were standing there. They saw it, got eyes on that person. And then they make a note, you know, appeared fine, talked to me, da-da-da, and they move on. And one of the things we found was, you fast forward to like a year ago, we had 3 suicides in a week in our jail where they were successful. And the weird part about that was we did all the checks on time. We reviewed video. We checked. The checks happened on time. So now we have this system in place and we just, you know, prevented 4 in a shorter, and even a one and a fire, one of the inmates tried to commit arson. We did all that in a shorter period of time. And I'm not saying the technology, because obviously our people did the right thing before and we still had a negative outcome. But I think the technology is helping them. It's keeping them honest. It's keeping them accountable. And honestly, everything I've heard from feedback from our detention officers, they love it. Because, you know, 15 minutes, if I just say, okay, sit here for
time
a period.
Can fly by.
Sit here for a period that you feel is like 15 minutes. And if you don't have anything to do, it's pretty easy. But if you have 100 things coming at you, which they do,
15 minutes is done in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Well, it's just amazing with technology. I was talking here. I was one of the speakers at the Mackers convention yesterday afternoon. And, you know, you and I were talking about the fact that, you know, 47 cents on every dollar from the Federal Department of Education just goes to regulatory compliance. Imagine if that actually was just coming to the state of Montana and going to act kids or school safety or whatever, instead of regulatory D.C. bureaucrat mumbo jumbo, right? But in a similar point, look at what else the Trump administration is doing right now. Fox over the weekend, I forget who the guest was, but military aircraft maintenance, C-130s. I saw a beautiful C-130 yesterday. They're now digitizing the maintenance records and the maintenance system in a much better way instead of this old system they were using before, to where, you know, something like of the fleet was down because of maintenance on an ongoing basis. And it's like, well, let's just digitize this process where you don't have to pull from the system. The system will print it out. They will order the part. And it just, a lot of this stuff can be automated so that instead of just having things get bogged down.
I mean, technology is wonderful and it makes us far more efficient. I mean, there's some artificial intelligence stuff that's coming out and I'm looking at it really hard to implement in our organization. I'm not going to get into it now because we haven't fully vetted what it is. But once we fully vet what it is, we're talking about saving our deputies on the road 60% of their time. That's a huge chunk. And when you talk about that, looking into the future, and people are like, well, we need more law enforcement on the road. Well, if you can come up with innovation and technology that saves you 60% of your time, that's going to save the taxpayer millions of dollars in a long road, you know, down the road. The only issue with it, Aaron, is two things. Do we trust the source of which we're getting the technology from? Which I think in this current presidential administration, that's being dealt with. And do we know how to do it when the technology doesn't work?
Yeah, that's right.
Do we know how to source these issues when the power goes out? Someone drops an EMP on it. Can we still go find parts and be resourceful? So I think you still, the human is still king. It always will be.
It always comes back to the men and women. He's in Iraq and Afghanistan. You can have all the fancy equipment, the air support, but at the end of the day, it's going to come down to you, the men and the women on the ground. It's funny, I was joking with the Farmers in Plentywood last week, you know, because I had, you know, technical software glitches, but we still got the show on the air. But it's like, just like farming, you can have all the fancy equipment in the world, but at the end of the day, something might go wrong and you still got to figure out, you still got to keep the show running. Sheriff Slaughter, great to see you. Thanks so much for dropping down and spending some time with us. And yeah, go check out our podcast later for the audio of our talk about school safety. It's a must hear conversation with Sheriff Slaughter. Back right after this.
You're listening to Montana Talks, bringing truth and freedom to Montana. Here's your host, Aaron Flint.
All right. Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. Yeah, here we are.
Go for it.
Okay, prep breakfast is about to get underway here at the Mackers Convention in Great Falls. Great to run into Miles Hutton, Blaine County Commissioner. Commissioner, good to see you here at the Mackers Convention. This is always a great crew, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a real good crew.
Yeah, I like your scarf. You've got your Save the Cowboys, Stop the American Prairie Reserve scarf around your neck right now. That's a good-looking scarf right there.
Yeah, the Save the Cowboys ladies, they do a good job, and we're glad to be associated with them. Do good work.
Well, what all has been going on in Blaine County? What do you want to tell listeners across the state before we get into the road issues and the county commissioner issues and more?
Yeah. It's been fairly busy. I guess we've been working on quite a few things. We actually bought our own gravel crusher this year to better utilize our resources and not have to wait on trying to get somebody to bring a crusher in and that. And I think it's going to be a pretty good thing. And our constituents are pretty excited about that. And we've been working on the northern border issues with the Phillips County commissioners and the Hill County commissioners and Valley County commissioners about trying to get the borders back open to pre-COVID hours and stuff, and we're kind of running into a stonewall on that.
Where's the stonewall? Is it on the U.S. side or the Canadian side? Because some of those border stations like north of Turner are only open, 5 days a week?
But the Canadians can go back 7 days. So it's made it a mess, you know. So the traffic just isn't, it isn't there. If you're only open 5 days and you're only open 9 to 5 when it used to have summer hours, you know, from eight to nine and 7 days a week, and then you switch to 9 to 5, 5 days a week, that's a mess. And the locals can't go when they need to get parts. And if they do go up, because they can go to Canada, can't come home again if you break down on the weekend unless you make a big circle and find a port that's open somewhere down the line. That's not handy at all.
Yeah. You were talking about getting a new crusher for the county.
Yeah.
What does a new crusher go for these days? Or a good used one, I guess.
it's a used one. And initially it was, I think, almost 1.3 million, but we got several discounts from RDO and from Sourcewell. We go through the government purchasing agency, and that saved us almost $550,000.
I had some fun conversations last night. I got to tag along on the Caterpillar dinner at the Cat Dinner last night.
And
we were talking roads, you know, because here we're at the Mackers Convention with the county road supervisors, the road crews, and county commissioners and more. And so a lot of people that know a thing or two about constructing roads and maintaining roads. And so I remember being in Afghanistan. I got to go visit the Red Horse engineers, and they were building a runway, I believe. And so I think they had their own crusher there as they were building the runway. So kind of interesting to hear, you know, at least one guy at the table's perspective on that, you know, how they build runways and why they build them certain ways. You have pretty incredible conversations here. You were telling me about this Montana Natural Resource Committee. Natural Resource Coalition. Tell us what this Montana Natural Resource Coalition is all about, how it got started, and some of the things you've been working to get accomplished.
Yeah. We got started. It's a group of county commissioners, and we have a 5-member board. Ross Butcher from Fergus County is our president. John Falgren from Valley County is our past president. Shane Gorder's vice chair, and Bill Wallace from Big Timber is a board member. I'm the secretary, and
So it's kind of similar to like how you have the oil and gas counties.
Yep, it is.
So various counties that say, hey, we want to team up so we can focus and support our oil and gas counties and our oil and gas production in these counties. Similar concept here, but hey, we want to support production agriculture and more.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've worked on a lot of different issues. As I was saying, we got a urban county representative. They joined up, Yellowstone County did, so John Ostlin went on the board recently. And we've worked on a lot of things from the BLM conservation and land health rule that they came out with. We filed a big draft against that. We work with Jim Carlson from Stillwater Technical in Kansas and Nate Deshamaker from Landmark Resources, and Nate's a huge asset in the state of Montana.
So if I'm hearing you right, so basically when you had all this federal overreach from the Biden administration, we saw what they were doing to give perks to these radical environmental groups, but then go against farmers and ranchers.
Oh, yeah.
What you're trying to do is, A, push back against any of this federal overreach, especially during the Biden years, or maybe now with Trump in office, it's an opportunity to be proactive.
You betcha.
How has the focus shifted from this Montana Natural Resource Coalition now?
We're hoping for the best. Like, we figure we have standing because of the documents that we've filed and on the 10J rule, like the on the expansion of the Endangered Species Act, and the changes that they made, you know, for climate resiliency and, you know, that kind of stuff, and so we have standing, and we have pretty doggone good chance that our suits going forward, they should be settled under this administration, or that's the hope. And then to truly be proactive and actually get some legislation through Congress, if at all possible, to stop.
That's a great point, because what we oftentimes see with like Waters of the U.S. and some of this federal overreach in the past is that because the bureaucracy and the Biden regime or the Obama regime before them, they used a process to put these things in place against the protests of local leaders like you.
Definitely.
But in order to do away with it, you have to follow a process to do away with it. But because you guys were in on the process opposing it from the start, now you get to be part of the process to hopefully, you know, unravel it and get something much better put in place.
All right, let's hold it right there. Yeah, thanks to our producer, Caden. I was able to catch up with Commissioner Hutton out of Blaine County earlier this morning. Very cool to what they're doing. Basically, there's 20 different counties that are teaming up as this Montana Natural Resource Coalition, and they're working very closely with our good friends from Save the Cowboys, Stop the APR, and to stand up for our resource industries and especially agriculture here as well. But 20 counties are taking part of that. I also got a chance to catch up with Commissioner Goffney out of Musselshell County. If we got time, I'll play that later this hour as well. But we were talking about, you know, the coal mine there and how they're still hoping to get that Crow Revenue Act across the finish line in Congress to keep the coal mine up and running. Obviously, they feel much more optimistic now with the Trump administration in Washington as well. Well, we're here live at the Heritage Inn in Great Falls for the Mackers Convention. And just this past weekend, I think this is where they had one
one of the biggest ever, if not the biggest ever, auction nights for the Charlie Russell, the CMR Museum here in Great Falls. Chris Warden is with us now. Chris, great to see you, my friend.
Hi, good morning, Aaron. It's good to be on.
How good is it to be back home in Great Falls and part of the CMR Museum? I mean, a lot of our friends, know you from Missoula and your work there and your, distinguished career in Missoula, but you're back home in Great Falls with the CMR Museum. It's just got to be just fun to walk into that building every day.
Oh, it's fantastic. This side of the mountains is always my home. I love driving down the Rocky Mountain front because I know I'm going to be home pretty soon. And the Russell Museum has been near and dear to my heart since I was a little kid. It's a bit of a family legacy that I'm involved in with the museum, with family members being involved over the years. And so to come back and be able to give a contribution to that is something so important to the community is really an honor.
How big of an auction was it just this past weekend alone? Went over at least a couple of days, right?
It was huge. So the Russell Auction is really the centerpiece of Western Art Week. Western Art Week is a show, a bunch of different shows here in Great Falls that span many different hotels. But at the heart of that is the Russell Auction. And we do two nights of live auction. We also have an event that's called Art in Action, where this year we had 26 different artists come in and do live paintings at the Metal Art Country Club. And that, what's neat across all of these events is it was our best attended auction, and we're knocking on the door of a record. So we sell art, obviously, at an auction. And this year we're at 9.34 million. And our record is 9.4 million.
Really? Wow. So money is still flowing in then essentially right now. Yeah, because I was going to say that's even bigger than the headline. I saw a headline from the Great Falls Electric. CM Russell Museum auction hits $9.16 million in sales, but that's the right. Money is still flowing in.
So I wanted to break some news this morning on Montana Talks.
That's so great. Yeah.
We sold two additional pieces yesterday. What's amazing about the Russell auction is people just come in from around the world for it. And we have a really high sell-through rate on our different pieces. We had 356 pieces of Western art for sale. 120 of those, 130 kind of in that range, were big historic pieces, including about 30 Russell pieces, which is just really unheard of. Russell is so valued and sought after that it's really uncommon that that many pieces come to market in an auction like ours. So we had the most historic art in our history, and we had the most Russells up for auction. It's hard to research this, but we think in 2 or 3 decades in the world.
Well, I'll tell you what, the best promoter that you had in advance of this auction, because I know you really were making a great show of it. I wish I could have been there for it, but I had a great time in Plentywood, of course. But the best promoter, we got a great phone call from the lovely Norma Ashby Smith, and Dwight called in as well, talking about just, I think, day one of the auction. And so it was so fun to hear her phone call. But she is in the house with us here at the Heritage Inn in Great Falls this morning as well. So we're going to catch up with Norma and Dwight as well here right after this quick break right here with Montana Talks, live from the Montana Association of County Road Supervisors Convention in the house, or the Roadhouse today, we'll call it.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordlund.
Yesterday, Representative Randon Gregg of White Sulphur Springs introduced House Bill 860, the Rural Montana Veterinary Workforce Act, to combat the state's veterinarian shortage, especially in rural areas. Beginning in the 2025-2026 academic year, the bill would offer up to $100,000 in loan repayment to 4 veterinary students who commit to practicing for 4 years in underserved Montana communities if passed. Preference will be given to Montana residents in accredited programs. The bill also establishes a 7-member advisory committee and will be overseen by the Commissioner of Higher Education. A recent study found that 38 of Montana's 56 counties face a vet shortage. With a new veterinarian school coming to Montana, the bill aims to ensure graduates have incentives to stay and serve where they're most needed. In other news, the U.S. Trade Representative's office launched an investigation into China's efforts to dominate the maritime, logistics, and shipbuilding sectors. After an investigation, the USTR released proposed actions, including assessing fees up to $1.5 million on ships arriving at U.S. ports if the ships are Chinese-built, operated, or flagged. A comment period is open for the proposal, and farmers say imposing fees will only increase costs for U.S. farmers importing inputs like seed and fertilizer and getting crops to market overseas. Again, the comment period for the proposal is open. I'm Lane Northmond.
Broadcasting live across the big sky, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. Great to run into County Commissioner out of Musselshell County, Commissioner Mike Goffney. Commissioner, great to see you again here. I think it was just 2 years ago we were here at the Mackers Convention, and then I saw you at the rally for coal and Roundup here recently as well.
That's right. So, but we're still working on keeping our coal mine going. It looks positive with our new administration. It helps a lot, but we were pretty desperate last administration, and we got the Coal Revenue Act that Senator Daines introduced. We're hoping that passes.
But yeah. I thought they would have gotten it done at the end of the last term.
They tried.
Because, you know, even though Tester was on his way out, you know, I know Senator Tester promised the Crow Tribe that he was going to support the Crow Revenue Act, which was good for the Crow Tribe and good for keeping the coal mine open. But, you know, for whatever reason, didn't happen at the end of the last session. But, yeah, Senator Steve Daines is fighting for it again this session. But could go either way, right, in terms of either the Trump administration just green lights the federal permit, or you get the Crow Revenue Act. But why not have both, huh?
Why not have both? Well, the mine in particular wants to see all the federal coal gone. I mean, they're getting tired of getting sued. And if they don't have federal coal in their way, well, they won't get federally sued, at least. So they might get state sued, but that's not as critical. So, yeah, this federal coal is a problem. But now, speaking of John Tester, I mean, we went and visited him, other commissioners and I visited him, and appraised him of this. He didn't even have no Crow Revenue Act existed until we mentioned it.
Really?
In Harlowtown.
Ah.
And he was very congenial. He was, well, of course, I heard he's up for election, so I think he was kind of,
was a little more open to it, but at the end of the day, didn't get the job done before they wrapped up their session last time around. But, yeah, now it's got, of course, the support of the entire congressional delegation. I know both Congressmen Zinke and Downing supported Senator Tim Sheehy backing it here as well. Yeah, it's interesting where you talk about where, okay, so before they were mining the coal on federal land, which is great for the county because you get the royalties the royalty money, but you get the job revenue, you get all that, but it'd be nice to keep mining on federal land because you get the royalties, but what happens in another 4 years? Okay, it might be good under Trump now, but what if you get somebody else that comes in
that's
that tries,
true. That's why the
tries to kneecap you again?
To get the federal coal completely out of the federal hands. And then if the Crow Revenue Act goes through, that will be private coal. It will be the Hope family actually own it, which we question who is the Hope family. But I don't know who they are, but I want to be a member of them. So because they're talking maybe $100 million out of that little chunk. But like I said, John Tester.
And that's just for the Crow Tribe in particular, right?
Yeah.
You have money that they'll make off of this deal.
Well, that's the thing. It's the Hope family. It's got private land, private mineral rights, federal, in the Crow Indian Reservation. And they're going to trade those for the federal coal in Musselshell County, which makes that coal Hope family coal. But it's nothing in the bill about that. It just says they're going to trade, and they don't say how much. And it's understood that they're going to give about 40% of the revenue to the Crow Tribe, but it's not understood either. Now, the commissioner and I have been trying to get a meeting with White Clay, Frank White Clay, the head of the Crow Tribe.
Yeah, the chairman, yeah.
And we can never seem to get connect with him, but we've talked to quite a bit of the members of the Crow Tribe, you know, a couple of little representatives, and they didn't even know about this trade. It's kind of odd. I said, you know,
That was early on.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Way back in the day. Yeah. 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 Now, of course, fully tracking and supporting
I
as
like
well.
I think so anyway.
But, yeah. Yeah.
But
yeah. Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, it's a huge job provider for Musselshell County and a huge driver for Yellowstone County. And in fact, I had, Signal Peak Energy, which operates the Bull Mountains Mine, on the show when they were announcing that they were getting. Yeah. You know, a lot of money to get a new hockey arena up.
I know. I mentioned that to Parker Phelps, the CEO of the mine.
Yeah, good guy.
I went and visited him here about 3 weeks ago, and I said, you know, we could have a hockey rink in Roundup, too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, with cold dollars, you can have nice things. This is why you get to have nice things. It's through the treasure state utilizing our natural resources. Right. And we've clearly got to rebuild that industrial base and then fight for what we've already got, which is the mine. What else is going on?
We'll hold it right there. Yeah, we'll hold it right there. Thanks, Caden, for running that conversation. Just one of the other commissioners we got a chance to catch up with here earlier this morning during the breakfast. Try and share more of that conversation with you here later in the week. We were talking about Central Montana water projects and so much more there for Musselshell County and really all the way over to Harlow. I had a great conversation with Commissioner Sell, who owns the hardware store there in Harlow, Montana as well. So catching up with a lot of great folks here. Well, back to our conversation with Chris Warden with the Charlie Russell, the CMR Museum here in Great Falls. We like to cover the controversial topics around here. You know, we don't mind having a little bit of a debate. There was a little bit of a controversy here during the break between you and Norma. All right, what is it? Is it 56 years or 57 years, Chris?
So there's a little bit of truth in both. So the Russell auction was started, I remember it because it was the year I was born, 1969. And as your listeners might know, Norma was the founder of the C.M. Russell Art Auction. So it's amazing that 56 years later, we're still doing this annual tradition. And it's such a huge event, one of the biggest events in Great Falls every year. We've actually done 57 auctions, though. So this was our 57th auction. During COVID, we didn't do one. In two other years, we did two.
So you made up
the history.
For it.
We made up for it.
Yep. There you go. Now, are we good, or are you two still going to fight, Norma?
No, I think we'll call it a peacemaker.
good. Well, Norma, it's so great to see you. And Norma and Dwight here. We've got the Norma Ashby Smith and Dwight Smith here. Man, we had so much fun seeing you guys at the Mint up in Big Sandy last August.
That was fabulous. We have pictures to prove it.
One of my favorite photos, if people come into our Montana Talk studios, was the photo of our crew there at the Mint. What a great time.
Yeah,
so fellow veterans and you folks prayed for our country right there at the table. And so what was it like? You know, you called in before or during the auction.
Yes.
What was it like being there for the whole time?
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. And it brought back all the memories of how it all got started. I mean, the main reason we got it started, well, it was a Geraldine auction that inspired me. I'd never been to an auction in my life. And it had all the elements of fun and excitement and profit. And I just loved it. We sold the estate of a lady by the name of Abby, and it all went, all sold, just like our sale went this year here. But anyway, we brought the idea to the Ad Club of Great Falls. They borrowed it, they stole it, they took it, and ran with it. And so that was great. And we did it for a number of years, and then finally the Russell Museum took it over, and they've done even more with it. So it's really been a great thing for the whole town. The whole community gets behind it, and all the restaurants and the bars and the saloons of Great Falls profit by it, and it's just great fun for everybody.
You said if you could have walked out of that auction with one piece. Now, there were so many incredible pieces to choose from, not just Charlie Russell pieces, but, you know, some local Montana artists that were selling some art for pretty high dollar as well. But if you could have walked out of there with one piece, what would it have been?
It would have been a Charlie Russell watercolor by the name of Women and Their Friends.
Women of America.
And it's just a beautiful, beautiful watercolor, and I loved it, and it went for over $1 million, so it was a little bit out of my reach financially.
$1.6 million.
$1.6 million.
So what I'm hoping is that the museum can negotiate with buyers. They'll put it on loan for some time so that everybody can enjoy it here in Great Falls for a while.
It really is a treasure. It's this beautiful piece that shows Indigenous women moving camp. And it's really Charlie Russell's honoring not just these indigenous women, but all women of America. It was painted in the 1920s during the suffrage movement and at a time when Congress was debating citizenship for Native Americans.
Yeah.
And he, you know, Russell wasn't super political in his painting, but he definitely took on topics. And this was his way of kind of honoring indigenous women and indigenous people and saying, hey, it's time for citizenship.
That's one thing that people always forget when it comes to this immigration debate and birthright citizenship is that if our founders in the Constitution intended for non-citizens to come to America, give birth to a baby, and then that baby is automatically a citizen, that's not how it was intended. Otherwise, why did we have to fight so that Native Americans, the first citizens, could actually be citizens, right? And so that's the history that always gets ignored when it comes to birthright citizenship, that they're just handing to non-citizens these days. But yeah, I was trying to find a couple of tweets here from Jim Strauss, who's now the head of the Montana Newspaper Association, because he tweeted out a couple of great photos from the Charlie Russell auction. I'll tell you about both of those right after this quick break here with Montana Talks, as the hour is just flying by. So stand by. More to follow right after this.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, Chris Warden, I found the tweets here. I was looking. They were going back only 3 days ago, but I've posted a lot of things on X since then. So here we go. Yeah, Jim Strauss shared a couple of photos. Hometown Boy Makes Good, Charlie Russell's Women of America watercolor painting, lights up the room as it hammers for $1.6 million at the Russell auction in Great Falls. And then he had another one, Charlie Russell's Mandan Buffalo Hunt watercolor, second highest sale of the night at $750,000 at the Russell auction in Great Falls. What were some of the other highlights from your standpoint?
Yeah, well, those two Russell pieces were just blockbusters. Probably the other thing that was really fun to watch, you know, because auctions, they're pretty exciting. And this one, there's this one painting that went that the room kind of turned into a prize fight with bitter paddles. And that was for a piece by Joseph Henry Sharp. He was a contemporary artist of Russell's, one of the first artists to really focus on indigenous art. Met Russell in Montana in the 1890s. And there was a piece called Moonlight Songs that was in the auction. Was just absolutely amazing. It's a cluster of three teepees, and they almost look like glowing lanterns. The luminescent and the paint and the light in this painting would just blow your mind. It was my second favorite piece after Women of America, and its range, I think, was like $200,000 to $400,000. It ended up going for $625,000, and it, you know, it's like watching a high-stakes Wimbledon match, like right down to the deadline. The room is just silent as they watch people bid back and forth, and then it just explodes with electricity at the end, and one of the best highlights of the whole night.
You know, this reminds me, too, I was talking with Dwight during the break here, and he was talking about how this auction is, because it takes up so much space in Great Falls, hotels and bars and the Four Seasons, that he was talking about how this becomes the launching pad for so many artists and some Montana artists, because it gets them in front of, you know, these bidders and these buyers from all over the world. And it kind of reminds me when I was at Warrior Taste Fest a couple of years ago. I had just been in Lewistown at the Cowboy Poetry Gathering, and I interviewed a bronze sculptor out of Stanford, Montana, and so that was fun. Well, then, what, a week or two later, he's at Warrior Taste Fest in Bozeman, and people are doing live art painting there, and then he's got his bronze sculptures that came up
in the middle that came up in the auction. I mean, here you go. Boom. They're going for like $30,000 when you start, you know, you get getting some folks bidding on it. So it's remarkable. But Norma, that's what Dwight was saying. Really, what you appreciated about this was the fact that this becomes a launch pad for some great Montana artists.
Yes, exactly. We have just been thrilled to see what's happened with these wonderful artists and to see them, their art take off and get big prices. And then for the benefit of the Russell Museum, that's wonderful as well. And that's what it's all about. Yeah.
What was that photograph that Dwight showed me? He showed me a photograph of you with one of the artists there. Yeah. I'll find out after the show. Who's that? Brooke Wetzel.
Wetzel. She's a dream woman, and she's so beautiful, and she does beautiful work. And she got Best of Show on the Friday night auction.
Yeah.
And so that was something.
For good reason. Yeah. A breathtaking piece.
Yeah. Beautiful piece.
I forget who I ran into. I think it was a Wetzel or a relative of a Wetzel. Maybe we were talking sports or something else in Plentywood last Thursday. And I was like, oh, is that part of the Wetzel family? You know, the Blackfeet Nation fame. And,
that.
So, so a very talented family all around.
Oh, yes. And her husband's in charge of Indian Affairs statewide out of Missoula. So they're a great family.
Yeah.
You know what's neat, Aaron, is we have I mentioned earlier, we have two nights of an auction. One of our nights, the first night, is called First Strike, and we had 106 pieces from contemporary artists. Those are living artists, and a lot of them are up-and-comers and new artists that we really, it's kind of like American Idol. We give an opportunity for new and emerging artists to put their art into a big show like the Russell. So on one end, we have these million-dollar historic pieces, and on the other end, we have art that is kind of new, up and coming, a little bit more modern and contemporary. And it's just there's something for everybody during Western Art Week and the Russell Auction.
Yeah. Well, this has been great seeing all of you, of course, all three of you, frankly. But actually, I got a great message here. I almost forgot to share this. So Ed Donahue sent me a message. I think he's in Billings now. He was in Bozeman for a number of years, but Ed says this: please tell Norma hello from Eddie. She was my favorite babysitter in the 60s. Plus, did you know my father built the Heritage Inn?
Yes, so, yes, I did.
You were a babysitter in the 60s,
too? I was, and I loved it, and I loved Eddie. And so, Eddie, thank you for your nice comment. And we thank Al, his dad, for building this building that we're in right now.
Yeah. You know, so here she is. The 1960s, I mean, John F. Kennedy. You interviewed President John F. Kennedy.
Yes.
She's babysitting Eddie. She's starting the CMR museum auction and everything. What did you not do in your incredible career? Of course, the local TV morning show, longtime anchor as well.
So. Keep it going.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, all of that, I thank the good Lord for giving me the image and the wisdom to do what I did. And I'm still going strong.
Yes, you are. Yeah, we're so blessed to live in this great state.
Yes.
Charlie Russell paintings is one of the greatest blessings we've got.
Well, for sure. Charlie's a Montana inspiration, but quite honestly, so is Norm Ashby. It's an honor to be on with her this morning.
That's right.
And it's an honor to be on with her, too.
Oh, you're too kind.
He's doing a great job.
All right. Well, we got to wrap already. We're out of time. Thanks for being with us. Back in studio with the Legislative Update. More tomorrow. If you